Listening Library presents Fatal Throne, The Wives of Henry VIII Tell All, by M.T. Anderson, Jennifer Donnelly, Candace Fleming, Stephanie Hemphill, Deborah Hopkinson, Linda Sue Park, and Lisa Ann Sandell. Read for you by Jane Entwistle, Justine Eyre, Fiona Hardingham, Elliot Hill, Elizabeth Noelden, Anne-Marie Lee, Catherine McEwen, and Heather Wilds. Before you begin, this book is about the six queens of Henry VIII. We know much about Henry. In the centuries since his death, hundreds of books have been written about him. Intelligent, charismatic, and handsome, the young Tudor king was loved and admired. He was brave, artistic, and athletic. He could debate theology, discourse on astronomy and medicine, compose music, joust, play tennis and dance, all with grace and ease. Henry ruled England from 1509 to 1547, at a time when his country was still emerging from the shadows of the late Middle Ages. Life was hard. Most people didn't live to see 40 due to disease and the perils of childbirth. Women had few rights. Education was only for the privileged few. Most of Henry's subjects could not read or write. When Henry took the throne, the Renaissance had been flourishing in Europe for over a century, but England was only beginning to embrace its humanist ideals. Bold advances had been made in science and technology by thinkers such as Copernicus and Da Vinci. Painters like Raphael and Titian, and writers like Dante had introduced a new realism into the arts. Theologians such as Erasmus and Martin Luther were calling for reforms to the excesses of the Catholic Church, and Gutenberg's printing press was speeding the dissemination of their radical ideas. Little would anyone have guessed in 1509 that Henry, a new, untested king, would eventually use those ideas to break with the past and set England on a course towards seismic political, economic, and social change. Every king, no matter how powerful, faces threats to his rule, and Henry was no exception. He needed healthy, vigorous sons to strengthen his hold on the throne. But his first wife could not produce them, so he decided to get rid of her. The Pope, head of the Catholic Church, did not like that, so Henry got rid of him, too, and thrust Catholic England headlong into the Protestant Reformation. We know much about Henry, but what of that discarded wife, and the five who followed her? Too often the six queens are seen only in their relationship to a forceful mercurial king. Catherine of Aragon is the old battle axe. Anne Boleyn, the seductress. Jane Seymour is the good wife. Anna of Cleves, the ugly frump. Catherine Howard is the giddy bubblehead. Catherine Parr, the stoical matron. But these women had lives of their own. They had dreams and hopes, ideas, opinions, ambitions. They were fighters, thinkers, politicians, strategists. They led troops into battle and hunted on horseback. They read, danced, intrigued, and sewed. They had children they loved, pets they adored. They gave money to the poor and supported artists and scholars. They ate peacocks and swans, wore pearls in their hair and diamonds on their sleeves. They defied expectations, Henry's and our own. My fellow writers and I have spent days, weeks, and months with their ghosts. We've pored over books and essays. We've dug through papers and proclamations, read writs and acts, diaries and depositions. We've stared at their portraits, trying to decipher their souls from their expressions. We've stood in the rooms they stood in, ate in, loved, argued, danced, and died in. We've followed them down paths they trod, gazed at the hills, valleys, and rivers they knew. We've come to know the ghosts. We've asked them many questions, and they've deigned to answer. This book holds their stories. The ghosts, in turn, forever hold pieces of our hearts. Catherine of Aragon, Humble and Loyal.
24th of July, 1527. The world is still dark beyond my window, but I can make out the tall figure of my husband, King Henry VIII of England, in the stable yard below. Beside him stands his lover, the torchlight glowing on her smooth young skin. They are readying to ride out, just the two of them, together. I watch as he helps her up into her saddle, lifts her easily, holds her. For a moment he cradles her little leather boot in his hand, caressing it tenderly before making sure it is safe in the stirrup. My breath snags. She laughs playfully, flirting, her eyes never leaving his as she places a hand on his upturned face. I sink into a chair. Madre de Dios, ayúdame, I whisper. Mother of God, help me. My lady, Maud Parr, comes into the room. She looks startled to see me. Your Grace, what are you doing up so early? She asks. Sleep is impossible. I pick up my sewing, a shirt I am embroidering for Henry. Maud sits across from me. I must tell you something, she says. I try very hard to listen, but the memory of Henry laughing with Anne, of him holding her in his arms, blots out everything else. Your Grace, Maud says. I blink. Please, begin again. I slip my hands inside the sleeves of my husband's shirt as she gathers herself to tell me about the letter Cardinal Wolsey has sent to His Holiness in Rome. In it, the Cardinal claims I was not a virgin when I married Henry, that I made love with his brother, Prince Arthur, when he was my husband, and that I lied about it, that I am lying about it still, that because of my treachery, my marriage to Henry is not a true union. The Cardinal is appealing to the Pope to declare Henry's and my 18 years together illegal. He is entreating the Pope to grant the King permission to marry again. Maud pauses before telling me the rest. Perhaps, she wonders, the Cardinal felt he needed to make a stronger case against me, because in the same letter he accuses me of being a sex-crazed woman who lured Henry into a forbidden marriage to satisfy my carnal pleasures. Me! And then, por Dios, the Cardinal tells His Holiness that my husband finds me too repulsive to sleep with because my sex organs are diseased. He says Henry has vowed never to use my body again, that it is too dangerous to his royal person, that lying with me will make the King sick. I push the shirt's long sleeves up my arms and rub my face against its fine linen. Cardinal Wolsey is the King's closest adviser. He cannot have written such lies without my husband's consent. How can Henry hate me so? I remember our wedding night, the feel of his hands on my trembling skin, the hot, stinging pain of our first loving, the blissful relief of lying in his strong, steady arms, a true wife at last. I pull my hands free of the shirt and lay it across my lap. I know Henry better than anyone else, certainly better than Anne Boleyn, for I have known him as a boy and a man, as a brother.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?